Welcome to the Tuesday Talk Show, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for joining us this morning. We'll take your phone calls after the top of the hour. In the meantime, if you want to jot the number down to call, it's 541-472-1270. And when you hear the sound of the radio coming back through your phone, that means that you're next in queue. And as soon as we complete the thought that we're on, we'll put you on the air and let you hear your question or comment live to our guest. A programming note before we get into today's program. We have a special one-hour talk show scheduled in the same time frame tomorrow morning, beginning about 9:35, this is the very same time with a very special guest here. So we invite you to tell your friends and neighbors about that, and we'll talk to you about that tomorrow morning. In the meantime, the official position is still no comment. In the meantime, we have a full house today from the city of Grants Pass. We have Lieutenant Jeff Hattersley from the Grants Pass Police Department. We have Fire Marshal Joe Hyatt here and our city attorney, Mr. Agoo. Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us today. Glad to have you with us here in our studio. I'm assuming today's topic is public safety. Is that fair?
That works, yes.
Okay. By the way, when you nod your head, they can't see it on the radio, gentlemen. So just feel free to jump right in. Now, we're going into the holiday time, and that is a time when everybody wants to feel fairly safe today, and it's also the time to be a little bit more vigilant. And, Joe, let's start with you. What are you looking at in terms of what happens over the holidays here? Is it boiling turkeys?
So, yeah, we're going into the cooking season where a lot of families are, you know, having big gatherings, and what we do is we have attention deficit, basically. People aren't kind of paying attention to when they're cooking. See a real big rash of cooking fires right now, and it's just kind of going to carry through Thanksgiving, Christmas. And again, it's basically just inattention, making sure that you're watching what's going on and doing it. We always have the classic turkey fail. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're going to boil a turkey in the peanut oil, people sometimes get those submerged. They're frozen. They overdo them. Something happens, and boom, the turkey flares up. Yeah. And it can be quite devastating. So if you're going to fry your turkey, you know, do it on something that's not flammable, not your deck. Do it outside. You know, there's no cover. And, you know, just follow the directions and use a lot of caution with that.
All right, and of course, this is also the time of the year right after Thanksgiving when people bring in live trees to their home.
Yes. So bringing those live trees in is great. Just need to keep them live and just keep watching them, you know, add water to them. Really great thing to do is add a little soda water to there as far as like a, some 7-Up or something similar to that. Kind of helps the tree get some glucose going, keeps it live. But, you know, watch that. If the tree's starting to die off, which I've had happen personally, it's just you sometimes have to take it out. The risk there is just immense from the wiring and everything being there. So if a tree is, you know, getting dead, take it out. And again, making sure you keep it watered. And a great option is an artificial tree. They have really wonderful options now. Me personally, that's what I did just from the risk. And it keeps my family, you know, a little bit more safe.
I chose the artificial tree also for more personal reasons. It's less work.
Yes.
At any rate, if I have questions about how to keep safe during cooking season or the tree or any question at all about outdoor lighting, who do I call? Can I call you?
Yes, definitely. Give us a call. You can reach us at just a city number. The city can transport us, or our personal number is
450-6000.
Yes, or you can call 450-6200. We'll get you right into the fire department, and we can get your question answered for you. We're, you know, definitely putting things out on our Facebook page, messages for safety, and also following along just with the Oregon State Fire Marshal's office. We basically are lockstep on our messages right now and trying to get that seasonal safety out there.
All right. Now I'm going to move over to Lieutenant Jeff Hattersley, Grants Pass Police Department. And we know that you're busy because we see your reports on a daily basis. But we're coming into a season here where what is the police department, other than your normal duties every day, focusing on here? I imagine liquor is probably one of the highest concerns.
Well, that's definitely a contributor. As we enter into the holiday seasons, tensions start rising. And as we're having the family gatherings, the family disturbances start up. So our domestic violence starts seeing a rise during the holiday season. Fortunately, we're putting together our domestic violence high-risk team. I talked to you about that last time I was here. But mid-December, we'll actually be implementing our threat assessment form and be able to get some better services to people that are experiencing that domestic violence. The message I want to send out to everyone during the Christmas time is if you see it, if you hear it, call it in to us so we can go check it out and make sure that people are safe and that everything's going to be okay.
Okay, two numbers there, 450-6260 is the police department. The other important number, of course, is 911.
That's correct.
That's why. This that you're putting together here for mid-December, can you give us some details on that?
So it's a scientifically based assessment form. And so when the officers go out to a scene of domestic violence, they'll end up asking this series of questions, and that helps us scientifically determine how dangerous of a situation that particular survivor is in at that time. Based on that, we can bring in additional resources. We can take a different look at it to try to keep the survivor and the family safe.
Just a real quick question here, because you're talking about mid-December now, but I see your reports on a daily basis, and it looks to me like domestic confrontations, for lack of a better word, are up right now.
They definitely are up right now. It's that time of year, especially as we start getting the inclement weather and people are staying indoors together.
Inside.
Yep, everybody's inside. Kind of like when we were dealing with COVID and everybody was at home together, and we saw quite a spike with domestic violence at that time as well. We're seeing that now during this winter season and the holidays. The other sad thing that goes along with this, that's a spike during the holidays, is an increase in suicide too. And that's another thing, is if you hear somebody that's depressed or somebody's talking about suicide, take that serious. Please give us a call. Let us get out there and talk to that person and try to get them some help so that we can avoid the ultimate disaster during the holidays.
Okay. City Attorney, Mr. Goo here. What are you doing to keep us safe here over the holidays? Are you just keeping these other guys in line?
They do a good job of keeping themselves in line. I think the police and fire have very good leadership.
Let's just underline that we're very proud of what we have here within Grants Pass in terms of professionalism on both of these departments.
100%. Again, the leadership is unmatched. It's a really good time to be part of the city, and it's a real pleasure to work with these professionals every single day.
Okay. You don't have any oversight over these. You're basically working with the city council and the city manager. Is that correct?
That's largely correct. I do answer questions from departmental directors, including the fire chief and the police chief, whenever necessary. I try to make myself available to also rank and file staff. If they need to call me for any reason, I'm completely open to them. They have my email. And I try to be as responsive as possible, because my client, as the entire organization, includes not only the directors and managers, but the rank and file staff. My job is to try to support them in any way that I can, give them advice when they need it on the fly. And if it's required, to do a little bit more research to make sure that they're right,
Most recently asked questions are the most questions, or the question asked most often. What are you dealing with?
So
put you on the spot.
Yeah, I know. We're dealing with a lot of issues in our parks, as people would know. And we see those reports on a daily basis. We have our CRT team out there doing regular patrols, doing their best to make sure that the park rules are staying enforced. And that's really one of those things that I get a lot is, what can we do? What should we do? And as the police department continues to navigate this injunction with this lawsuit that we're still dealing with, it's more important than ever to make sure that they have the resources and the information that they need to do their job effectively.
Now, I'm under the impression that you were very instrumental in helping the city outline its time, place, and manner regulations that have been imposed on our park residents right now. Is that fair, and are you happy with what's going on so far?
I think that for what it is, it's been very helpful in providing a little bit of clarity and predictability for the police department to know what they should go out and be looking for. People are allowed to sleep and rest in our city parks if they have no place to go. That does not mean that these homeless individuals are to be bad neighbors. The expectation is that they are going to be good neighbors within these city parks. And that's, I think, really what the time, place, and manner regulations were getting to. It wasn't necessarily about sleeping or resting, but rather it was about those indicators, those things that don't make a great neighbor. If I'm living next to somebody who's throwing trash onto their lawn, or you know, has an offensive smell or is drinking and smoking at all hours of the night, you know, they're not a very good neighbor. And I think that if individuals are going to be sleeping and resting in the parks, as they're allowed to do under injunction, the least that these people can do is act as good neighbors. And we see that a lot in this community. We do see some homeless individuals who are great neighbors who do their best to keep themselves clean, keep to themselves. But just like any other group, you know, there's going to be people who try to take advantage of the injunction and try to take advantage of the city's legal position.
All right. I'm going to go back to Lieutenant Hattersley here in just a moment on that same topic. But in the meantime, is there any further steps the city can take? And I know you've been deep into this topic for a long time. Is there any place else we can go? Are other communities looking at us? Are we looking at other communities that are facing the same problem?
So it's a very interesting question you're asking, because I think the way that I would characterize that is that Grants Pass is further along in what I would call this experiment. It's the federal court imposing a set of rules on a municipality that has democratically elected leaders who may or may not want to do what the federal court is proposing. It is very difficult at this point in time to make any additional changes to our municipal code, because the next step is to address sleeping and resting. And that is something that we're asking the Supreme Court to have a look at. And so in order to keep our case ripe for determination, we want to keep things as a status quo. And that all that means is that we want for there to be a controversy for the Supreme Court to step in and say, hey, federal courts, you got this wrong. And that's what we're hoping for at this point.
All right. Looking ahead, the Supreme Court hasn't agreed to hear this yet. Do we have any indication on when they'll make that decision or when it could be heard?
Yeah. So we expect a decision from the Supreme Court as to whether they'll take the case in either late December or early January. We are very hopeful and anticipate that they will take the case. If they do take the case, we expect oral argument to happen in February of 24, with a decision in June or July of 24.
All right. So not as far in the future as it might have been. All right. We certainly appreciate that. Now, this is the test case, as I understand it, for communities across, the entire continent that are dealing with this same problem. This is the one that's going to go decide, right?
That's correct. So... as I've said it, Grants Pass is the tip of the spear. We have cities up and down the West Coast, not only on the West Coast, but like you said, in the continental United States, looking to how this case shakes out. I think it's going to be a real watershed moment for our country to determine how we're going to move forward with homeless policy. And it's very interesting in this case, too, that, you know, we have individuals from all sorts of political persuasions from both left, right, and center. I'm sorry. Well, from left, right, and center, who have said the Supreme Court needs to hear this case, that the Ninth Circuit got it wrong. I mean, we're talking about Governor Newsom, and we're talking about
Governor Newsom would agree.
Yeah, Mayor Breed from San Francisco. And to that end, our case has garnered a lot of amicus briefs. So amicus briefs are friend of the court briefs that other interested parties submit to the Supreme Court. We had filed on our behalf 24 amicus briefs representing 119 different individuals and organizations, which is astronomical. That does not happen in Supreme Court cases. So that's part of the reason that we're really hopeful that the Supreme Court's going to take the case and render a decision for us.
So in your opinion, that's positive that they will probably hear it. By the indication of all those briefs?
By the indication of all of those briefs, different circuits coming out with different sorts of, coming out with on opposing sides, the Ninth Circuit and other circuits in the country have had differing decisions when it comes to this sort of realm. We have a smattering of different laws across the country. I mean, in Tennessee, camping is a felony. And that, under the Martin v. Boise framework, is patently unlawful in Oregon. So, it's one of those things that, in combination with the briefing and the support that the city has been getting, that makes us hopeful that the court will hear the case.
Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate that. Now, Lieutenant Hattersley, how has that time, place, and manner ruling by the city council helped your department, hurt your department, added extra work? You tell me.
Well, it certainly helped us out. I think we're fortunate that city attorney and the city council came up with some good guidelines for us to be able to use. We weren't sure exactly what that injunction was going to mean to us, and this kind of gives us the boundaries to work within. We're law enforcement officers, and so we need the laws to be defined and know what they are so that we can go out and enforce those. I think also our residents that are out in the parks, they kind of have an expectation that we're going to know what we're doing and what can be enforced and what can't. That's what we've been doing. Our officers have just been working diligently out there to enforce those guidelines that we were given.
What is the compliance level out there? Because daily we see the reports of camps being flagged and arrests being made in the parks almost on a daily basis. But there are good ones out there also?
Well, we have good and bad, just like with any group that you deal with. There's some folks that are absolutely compliant with taking the tents down when they're supposed to and not having their tent too close to another tent. And then there's other people that just simply could care less. And those are also the ones that are scattering rubbish and things like that. And then we have the good neighbors in the park that are out there trying to clean up what the bad ones are scattering around. So it's definitely a mixture of people and personalities that are there in the park.
Extra level of effort that it's put on your department?
Our CRT team has been out there.
CRT, Community Response Team.
That's correct, mm-hmm. Community Response Team. They've been out there. We have an additional sergeant on that team now, and they've been out trying to hold people accountable for these laws that we have on the books now, and it keeps them extremely busy. On top of getting out and posting these tents when they've been there for too long, and then when it's past 72 hours, we have to actually collect those and then hold that property. We can't just dispose of it like some people might think. So there's an extra effort by not only our officers, but our community service officers, our property people, with warehousing that property as we gather it and clear out those camps. And then what happens typically is the people that own that property will come get that released, and then that property gets taken back out into the parks again, and it's kind of a cycle that keeps on going.
How much space is being utilized right now to protect their property when they're absent?
I'm not sure what the space is right now. I don't know if the city attorney has an idea on that one. I know we were using one of the loading bays over at the city shops. That was completely full of property at one point, and I believe we have a Connex container that we're using now that's storing property as well.
Yeah, because I've seen that come through on releases before, and I'm just curious, where are we storing all of this, and how much space is it really taking? And that's, of course, money out of the pocket.
That's correct. Fortunately, we've got some space at city shops that we've been able to use, but it does take up a lot of space.
All right. When you're dealing with these people in the park, and I've also had reports of fire coming in here. Joe Hyatt, if you want to weigh in on this, how are your two agencies working together to ensure the safety down there, not only for the people in the park, but for the neighbors around the park?
Well, our biggest concern, is overdoses. That's what we're seeing tremendously, and trying to support those folks in there. The season, comes again, we're getting into the holiday season. I think we're going to see an increase in that. So basically, it's just our response and supporting those citizens the best way we can. We just encourage folks, there's a lot of resources out there for them to get the Narcan and protection. Calling 911, getting us out there. Our police officers have been excellent in getting there very quickly and administering the Narcan. So we've seen overdoses that we used to see a lot of deaths. Now we're actually saving those folks and trying to support them and get them some help and what they need. Then, of course, we just want to be there to support the police department as well, helping them with, fires that are setting in the parks. We were really concerned because we actually saw a really big spike in tent fires last year. Mm-hmm. So this year they have the ordinance now where you can't actually have the heating or a device in your tent. We had a fatality 3 years ago down at the park. Baker Park, where a gentleman was in there, had a Mr. Heater, ignited his sleeping bag and his tent, and unfortunately he succumbed to that. So those are our big concerns right now, is just trying to, you know, support them in safety. We also work with agencies trying to get, like, warming shelters together. What we do is we go in and try and get those certified for those folks so that we can put them in a nice, safe environment where they can have those warming shelters and get what they need.
This time is just flying by this morning, and I want to thank all you three gentlemen. I'm not sure that the topics that we landed on were what you came in to talk about, but we've still got some time left, although I do have to pay some bills here, so we'll be right back.
Medical research.
I've got about 3.5 minutes left before we have to break for the news coming up here, and I want to go back to Joe Hyatt here because you mentioned overdoses and the administration of Narcan. Have your people had special training to administer Narcan? Is it difficult? I understand it's even available over the counter. Is that correct? You guide me through this.
Yeah, there's different methods for getting it. There's the public method, which is the nasal Narcan that they can get. They can get, like I say, a lot of different places. Max's Mission's one of the most active in our community that people can get it. Accidental exposure, they can get it from their pharmacy. And then basically, we have trained EMTs as part of our training. Everybody that's a firefighter is at least a basic medical technician and can provide those services. We also have up to paramedics. So, you know, in the unfortunate cases where these folks are in cardiac or respiratory arrest, we're giving the full care that we can, you know, just like until the ambulance gets there. We have the same staffing and providing those same services to, you know, support their respirations, shock them back into life, and help them get to the ER where they can get their definitive care.
Your crews are usually on the scene before the ambulance arrives?
Yeah, I mean, we're kind of spread out throughout the community, mm-hmm. and so we can get there. It's one of those things that, you know, we have to have staffing for fire, so we're already there and available, so it's just a natural fit that we respond to these medical calls and provide that rapid service. It's not only just that we get there first, but we, you know, when we have a lot of people there, many hands make light work, so we are able to provide a really high quality of service, especially in like a case like a cardiac arrest where there's like a lot to do, and we've had great success in our area with arrests and people actually having what we call ROSC, return of circulation. And we basically are very proud of that process, working with our ambulance company, AMR, to do that.
Yeah, a lot of people out there might not be familiar with the anytime you see a fire engine roll, you have all of those emergency medical systems with you on scene every time you roll.
Yeah, we're kind of like a big, huge toolbox. Yeah. We have all those medical equipments. We have all the stuff to fight fires. We cut people out of cars. We're just, like I say, we're in the community. It's a natural fit that we're there to take care of these folks.
All right. Well, I want to thank you very much. We're going to continue this. Once again, we've got the city attorney, we've got the fire marshal, we've got a police lieutenant in studio today. So if you have questions or comments, by all means, hold them. Give us a call right after the top of the hour news. You're listening to KAJO, Grants Pass, Oregon.
Choosing a company to drill your well.
Tuesday Talk Show continues this morning. If you have a question or comment for our guest, by all means, you're welcome to give us a call. We'll put you on the air live. The number, 541-472-1270. And when you hear the sound of the radio coming back to your phone, that means that you're next in queue. And as soon as we complete the thought that we're on, we'll put you on the air live and let you air your question or comment directly to our guest. We have a full house today, but just before we get into that, once again, that programming note for tomorrow, we have a special talk show scheduled right here from 9:30 to 10:30 tomorrow with a very special guest on here on KAJO Radio. I'm sure it's going to be of vital interest to many of you out there, longtime friends and neighbors of KAJO Radio. That's tomorrow morning from 9:30 to 10:30. In the meantime, welcoming our guest once again, we have a full house today. We have police lieutenant, the city attorney, and the fire marshal all in house today talking about public safety. And I've got to give Lieutenant Hattersley equal time in response to what we were talking about just before the news with our fire marshal and talking about arrival at emergency situations here. You're there first, aren't you, Jeff?
Usually a lot of times, yes. First of all, I'd like to say we've got it pretty lucky here in Grants Pass because we have a great partnership with the fire department. Not all cities have that relationship, and we're lucky to have it. But yes, a lot of times what happens is, based on the type of scene that it is, the police officers will need to go in first to make sure the scene's safe, and thereby usually, or a lot of times, end up administering that Narcan first as they're getting the fire department in there to assist and starting CPR and all those things that have to be done at those scenes.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. It's good to know that everybody there is working together. I want to, Mr. Agu, step in here. Are our first responders protected from situations like that, from any suits or...
Yes. So as professionals, they're expected to render aid. They actually have a professional and legal duty to render aid. So that's something that, you know, as a part of their job, they would be insulated from. I think a question that comes up, though, is that what if somebody wants to help somebody that they see on the side of the road or, you know, having an overdose?
A good Samaritan, essentially.
Yes, a good Samaritan. So somebody who goes to help another person has no legal or has no legal duty to do so. However, if they choose to do so, they are largely going to be also protected by our Oregon's Good Samaritan laws. That is with the caveat that you don't put an individual in a worse situation than they were in before you rendered aid. But it's very broad, and it's a good way for people to feel protected as they render aid to individuals who may need it.
Would an individual outside of law enforcement be liable if they didn't render aid in a particular situation?
No, they would not. Private citizens do not have a legal obligation to render aid. They do not have a legal obligation to make sure that somebody is safe. Obviously, you know, if they're the ones who are the cause of that injury, that's a completely different story. But if I were to see somebody on the side of the road, I would not be obligated to help them in any way, shape, or form.
All right. I just wanted to get the legal definition out there so people know, and that's what we're talking about today, is keeping people informed. We talked about just briefly the overdoses and the increases, and either Joe or Lieutenant Hattersley, either one of you step in. What kind of increase have we seen in overdoses over the past year, over COVID? What are we dealing with right now that we weren't dealing with 4 or 5 years ago right now in terms of drug overdoses?
Well, certainly this is epidemic proportions that we're seeing with the fentanyl on the streets. It was a opiate heroin crisis for a while. Now it's moved into mostly a fentanyl crisis. The overdoses are just almost a daily occurrence. The sad thing is, it used to be if a police officer rendered aid and saved somebody from an overdose, that'd be a life-saving medal. But now, in this day and age, since it's such a common occurrence on a daily basis almost, it's not even looked at as a life-saving medal. It's looked at as that's what we do every day when we go to work.
All right, Joe said his people are all got special training for delivery of Narcan. I'm assuming your officers do too.
Yes, we have training with the nasal form of the Narcan. We don't have any paramedics on our team, so we don't have anything beyond that form of Narcan, but it's been very effective. There have been many times where it takes 3 or 4 doses before it starts to have an effect, but the Narcan has been very helpful.
You said this is a daily occurrence Grants Pass?
Nearly daily occurrence in Grants Pass.
Oh, my. Okay. I think everybody was aware that there was a problem. I'm not sure they're aware of the scope of the problem that your people are dealing with on a daily basis out there. And just a quick question here. I know we can't talk about ongoing investigations, but are there ways that the police department is working right now to deter what is happening, stopping those drugs from coming in? Is there anything you can tell us there? I know you're always vigilant.
Well, certainly we work diligently with our partners going after the suppliers of the drugs that are coming into our area. We're also still enforcing the ballot measure 110 and issuing the citations and getting the small amounts of drugs off the streets also. We believe that it's important that we do that to try to get people into treatment, also to show that the problem is continuing. A lot of times if you stop writing those tickets, it would show statistics that there's no longer a drug problem, and we know that that's not the truth. So we're working both with the lower levels and the upper levels to have an impact on those drugs coming into our area.
Measure 110 was going to be my next question anyway. You just opened the door. So let's talk about 110, because your department has been the one department in the state that has issued more citations than any other department, and that's not per capita. That's total number. That's correct.
That's correct.
All right. Is that having an effect?
I think it's having an effect with the decision makers in our state. I think they're taking a look at what we're doing, and they're realizing that the problem is continuing. Because we're writing these citations, they're listening to our chief as he goes to these different conferences and meetings and talks about the needs that we have and the problems with ballot measure 110. And we're very optimistic that things may change in a manner that will allow us to better help people that are addicted to this very dangerous drug.
All right. Mr. Agu, you're just nodding your head. Jump in on this if you want.
Ballot measure 110, when enacted by vote in 2020, I think that a lot of people didn't really have an idea of what it entailed. And it clearly hasn't had the intended effect. And so we're hoping that the legislature will, you know, have another look at this next year, see what reforms that they may introduce to ballot measure 110, because it's very clear that the situation we have in the city is untenable. It's very, very difficult. I couldn't imagine being a police officer or a firefighter, a first responder, just on a daily basis, having to go out there and possibly administer Narcan to save somebody's life. You know, again, that's their professional duty, and I'm sure they're happy to do it. But for any individual, it has to weigh heavily on them.
Let me follow through on that just a little bit. As an attorney, do you have your hands on the pulse of the legislature and what they're hearing right now? Because I know that there have been petitions to repeal 110. I know there have been lots of amendments being offered for it in the next legislative session. Do we have a feel on which way that's going yet?
You know, it's more likely that there's going to be some sort of wholesale reform of Measure 110 rather than a full repeal. I think that having a ballot measure like that was enacted by a vote of the people has a lot to do with that. Although it was a very narrow vote, if I do remember. There's definitely going to have to be some sort of reform, because the notion that a traffic ticket is the consequence for using a drug as dangerous as fentanyl is kind of insane when you think about it. It's one of those things that almost boggles all logic. So it's very clear that some reform is going to have to happen, and I think that that's what the legislature is going to tend towards more rather than a full repeal.
All right, we pass out citation after citation after citation. Lieutenant Hattersley, I don't know if you have an answer for my next question. Do we know what happens with those citations? Do people even show up? Is that turned into a revenue stream?
It definitely does not turn into a revenue stream. With that type of citation, if the people gets the citation, bothers to call the number on the citation and talk about their drug problem, the ticket goes away. What we're finding is that most of these tickets, just nothing happens with them. I don't know if the courts have made a decision on what they're going to do with those or how it's going to be handled, but it's kind of a failed process at this point.
I can speak to that a little bit more, too. And it's not just the ballot measure 110 tickets. It's all of these tickets for violating park rules. They're written, citation's written, and an individual has to show up to court to, you know, it's like getting a traffic ticket to contest the validity. What we're seeing is a lot of failures to appear. People are not showing up. And oftentimes, there are violations that are, frankly, more than possessing or using fentanyl in the park, that are up to $295, they go unpaid. And it's pretty clear that the court isn't going to be assessing them as a lien against somebody, because there's nothing to lien. We see a lot of failure to appears for all of these citations, including ballot measure 110. And like Lieutenant Hattersley was saying, you know, you call a phone number on the citation and talk about your substance abuse issues, and the ticket goes away. And it's really, again, you know, it was a good intention, just not very great execution in terms of the ballot measure.
That being said, in terms of when we're not talking just about drug situations in the park, but right now I see criminal mischief and trespass arrests and lodgings, and the lodgings don't seem to last very long. As a matter of fact, I was in a newsroom Saturday morning here and going through the logs, and there was one gentleman there who was arrested for about the same thing about six times since last May. So is it a revolving door? Is there a real penalty for aberrant behavior in our situation right now? What is the status of these situations? I also saw one guy who just wanted to get warm again and acted up in order to get lodged. And I'm betting that's almost a daily basis also, isn't it, Lieutenant?
You know, it is. I think there's a lot of factors that play into that. Just like staffing is an issue with the police department, trying to get our numbers up, keep people through the academy, that's an issue. Our district attorney's office is also having issues with staffing. And, you know, we could arrest people all day long, but they only have so many attorneys at the DA's office to be able to prosecute. Then also there's only a certain number of public defenders to be able to represent people, too. So I think a lot of times on these lower-level cases, there's a things are weighed out and there's decisions made to not prosecute on some of those lower-level type crimes due to the staffing.
Is there any situation for the term we use in the newsroom is frequent flyers? The one who's been arrested for the same thing for six times in the last probably about once a month.
I don't want to speak for the DA's office and how they mm-hmm. look at that, but we certainly do try to track those individuals that are becoming a nuisance. And then we discuss that with the DA's office so they can make their decisions.
We'll invite the district attorney in and just get the straight skinny on that. But those are just things that people are seeing here on a daily basis and hearing about on a daily basis. And if I had you here, I'd be negligent for not asking.
In the
meantime, everybody, take a deep breath. We'll be right back. We've got some bills to pay, and then we'll finish up with our guest today.
Searching for the right.
Welcome back, everyone. In studio right now, we've got the lieutenant from the police department, the city attorney, and the fire marshal in here. And basically, we were talking about public safety coming into the holidays here. And I think we've got time to reinforce what we're really talking about here today. And that's public safety and keeping the people safe through this coming season. Is that start next? Thanksgiving is next week.
Yeah, it's amazing. Oh, it's right there.
Yeah. All right. Joe, what's your department dealing with right now? And I know we're talking about trees and cooking. And give us some details.
So, yeah, what we see right now is kitchen fires. Hopefully they're keeping really small. But again, you know, when we go into that holiday season, it seems like it's unfortunate we have at least one, you know, Christmas tree fire a year, and it's just, you know, so devastating for the families, and we just want to try and, you know, break that chain of that happening, try and give some good education, make sure that they're there. And again, you know, we really encourage people to smoke alarms. Smoke alarms are what saves lives. We go into homes where they've been disabled or they're not working. We really encourage folks to have that. That is going to be their first chance of survival is getting that. We can get there quickly, but sometimes, you know, it's you need to get out before we're there.
Right. It goes off while you're cooking. You take the battery out and forget to put it back in. Oh, golly, no.
Yeah. And like I say, that's like having a firefighter live in your home. It's right there to wake you up, mm-hmm. Take care of you, make sure that you're there. But it's not a replacement for being safe, but it's definitely there to help you and help us.
Okay. That's safety tip number one, your smoke alarm, by all means. All right. Hey, how about safety tip number two?
Is, again, we're talking like the attention when you're cooking. Especially during the holiday season, people have a lot of folks over. They're distracted. Just making sure that, you know, that you're watching what's happening on your stove. And, you know, again, we have, you know, Christmas lights going up pretty soon and, you know, Christmas trees. We worry about the wiring, you know, not to overload circuits, to look what you're rated for. Don't overdo those. Use, you know, appropriate devices. We see a lot of times people will just get these multi-plug adapters that have no circuit breaker protection on them and just way overload a circuit. When you think about an overload, you have an old radiant heater that is generating enough heat where it's glowing red and will ignite in a piece of paper. That's a properly operating circuit. So that same amount of energy can go into a poor connection or a fault, and that's where we see our fires occurring. So just making sure that those are good connections. We have those current protections in there, and, you know, look at what your lights are rated for and don't overload those circuits.
Okay, safety tip number three. I know there's got to be a third one.
Driving. As we get into the winter season, we see a lot of accidents and people just having cognizant of what the weather conditions are and driving for those. We definitely see an increase even in the rain, but especially when we get into, you know, the icing conditions, we're going to see an increase. And that's kind of our mission right now as well, as, you know, is basically getting out there and helping those folks that have had a traffic accident, working with our law enforcement partners, and basically trying to get people the help they need.
Okay, and Christmas trees.
Christmas trees, again. You know, I was a live tree guy for a long time, and for my family, I switched over to the artificial tree. Works great. If you do get that live tree, just, you know, remember, keep it watered, keep it alive, and don't hesitate if it dies. I know it's kind of a pain, but replace the tree. The consequences otherwise are just devastating to a family. You know, we see that, and that's one of our heartbreaking part of our jobs is when we do that.
All right, Joe, one quick question here, and that's about staffing, because I know here at the radio station, everybody is right now racing to solidify the days that they want off and using up their very last days of leave. I kind of suspect that your department kind of has to really gauge that closely, don't you?
Well, yeah. I mean, we have to have staffing on. It's not an option for us to have low staffing or somebody not show up for the day.
You can't close for the day.
So we have a lot of overtime and force hires. So basically, mm-hmm. You know, there are times when we can't cover the shift and we have to actually force hire our firefighters back because we're so minimally staffed. We just don't have anything extra. The minimum is there. So it's, like I say, we're having to do overtime. And unfortunately, especially during the holiday season, it's forcing somebody to come back to work. It's in their contract. It's being a firefighter. It's part of the job, but it's never fun to have to do that. You know, we look at the fact that what it takes to put out a fire and what it takes to actually make a rescue in a home, and we know that that is going to be, you know, about 14 to 16 people all kind of congregating at one time to do that. So we're just trying to make sure that we have that ability.
Yeah. When I first got into radio, met my wife, it was, the radio goes 24/7, and the phone can ring, and I have to go anytime. But it's a little more urgent for firefighters. If I don't go, it's a little dead air. If you don't go, it could be death.
Yes, definitely. And like I say, you know, we don't get the holidays off. We don't, you know, get to take time off. It's being there and making sure that we're serving the public. You know, this is a labor of love for firefighters. This is not a profession that, you know, people just decide to willy-nilly go into. Take it very seriously. Our firefighters are extremely well-trained. They constantly are working to improve themselves. And you know what? We have firefighters that basically that's their life commitment is to stay here until the time that they retire and make sure that they're serving the community.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much,
and
Joe.
If I can interrupt there.
I was just going to throw it to you.
Speaking of that, both the fire department and the police department are looking for good quality candidates to join our ranks. Staffing is short. Part of the reason it's short is being able to find good quality people that pass background and are willing to be on our team. So if there are any listeners out there that they want to think about being a firefighter or a police officer, take a look at the city website, the HR page, and get that application in. We can definitely use the people.
We're definitely recruiting right now.
Okay. Are there characteristics that either of you are looking for? That say, I might make a good police officer if I...
Well, we're looking for people that are ethical, honest people that have a personality that wants to serve the community. They need to be in good physical shape. Obviously, we'll get them in even better physical shape as they go through the academy. But it's really neither of these jobs are for just anyone. You need to be the right person. But if you're the right person for the job, you're going to love it, and you're going to get paid to have fun. And that's where I'm at. I know that's where Joe's at, and that's what we're looking at moving forward.
Gentlemen, I have a great many more questions for you, and I have no time left. Christian, Mr. Agu, I'll give you the last shot here.
All right. Well, it's definitely a privilege to work with fire and police. Great people, great leadership, and I guess my message to everybody is to be safe out there during the holiday season, hug your family, and enjoy your time with them.
All right. Thank you very much, Lieutenant Jeff Battersley, our city attorney, Mr. Agu, and Joe Hyatt, the fire marshal. Once again, reminder, we'll have another special talk show for you tomorrow, 9:30, right here on KAJO Radio.